The sermon title that you have published in your bulletin this morning could probably serve as a question on a television game show, where they give you the first part of a question and then you are to guess what the rest of the question is. Or maybe you choose a category to complete the sentence. But I'm not posing a fragmented question this morning for a game of some kind. But yet I'm introducing it for a very important reason. One of the conversations that pops up quite often around West Park these days is that of leadership. And in any given setting, that pops up and it's not unusual to hear discussion, if it's in small groups, or if it's a men's business meeting, or if it's in the back of the building, or on the parking lot, or wherever, there's a lot of conversation about the selection and the appointment of elders. And I realize there are varied opinions on the timetable of this, of when it ought to occur. And that discussion is necessary. It's important. It's proper. And a great deal of prayer and a lot of thought and a high degree of trust needs to lead these discussions. And so, purposefully, I'm not going to address the timetable this morning. That's a different discussion for a different day and a different venue than what I have right here. But I do think, and I thought about it this week, that it probably would be beneficial at this point to pause and to ask a question. Why in the world would anybody want to be an elder anyway? Why would anybody want to take on a task of this multitude? Whenever we start talking about the office of elders, shepherds, bishops, overseers, all these terms are used in the New Testament. And we preach sermons about it. Generally, usually, we go to 1 Timothy chapter 2, Titus chapter 2, and we spend our time looking at the biblical qualifications that are listed there for an elder in the Lord's church. And that's certainly very important that we do that. And we've done that recently on Sunday mornings in our Bible class together. We'll also be doing some more of that in some sermons together at the proper time. Because we don't want to appoint elders who don't meet those requirements. We need to be sure that the men are scripturally qualified, but that's not what I want to do this morning. I want to spend a few minutes with you today looking specifically at the desire of being an elder. Because I believe with all my heart, God has a design for elders that we ought not to ignore. We cannot ignore. I think it's possible that we could actually qualify men, find men that meet the requirements, that pass the test, if you please, on paper, but yet they don't have the desire to serve. We could count kids and count wives and try to decide whether they're kind and above reproach, gentle, hospitable, and all these things that are so vitally important. But we could get all that and we could qualify a man on paper, as I said, but the question's got to come up somewhere. Does he really want to serve? Does he want the job? Does he truly want to be a servant as an elder in the Lord's kingdom? And even this question becomes a little tricky. Because if we ask the question about desire and we say, yes, they do desire the job, then we really have to ask the question, why do they desire it? Do they desire it for power? Or do they desire it for ministry? to be able to serve? Why do they think they're ready? Why do they think that they are the right man for the job? And so there's a lot to think about just in that one question. Why in the world would anybody want to be an elder anyway? So I want to ask that question this morning. I want us to look at it. And then before we quit here in a minute, I'm going to offer an answer, at least my answer. The Bible indicates that elders have some good things, some really good things. Being an elder have some wonderful, great things about it. The Bible's clear on that. The Bible indicates that elders, first of all, have a certain respect with God. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 1. The Apostle Peter wrote these words. He said, "To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder, a witness of Christ's sufferings, and one who will also share in the glory to be revealed." We can observe some special insights about Peter from this verse. First of all, he said, "I appeal as a fellow elder." It's interesting to me that Peter doesn't talk about the things that he had seen or that he had done or that he had experienced in his ministry with Jesus in that 3-year period and in his life. He doesn't mention one thing about being able to walk on the water out there walking towards Jesus on that troubled sea. He doesn't say a word about being on the Mount of Transfiguration and seeing Moses and Elijah with Jesus. He doesn't bring up the fact that he was always in the inner circle of the disciples with James and John, that he seemed to be closer to Jesus than anyone else. But he enters this conversation, this particular conversation, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 1. He starts it out by saying, as a fellow elder. It's almost appears that maybe being an elder has become Peter's identity at this point. That he's honored and he's humbled by the position. I don't know, but that's interesting to me. Peter indicates that as an elder, he says he is a witness of Christ's sufferings. Now, without a doubt, we've already discussed it here for a second, Peter saw Jesus suffer through the entire crucifixion process. Peter delivered the sermon on the day of Pentecost in Jerusalem where he convicted everyone there of their guilt, that they were guilty in taking Jesus and putting him on the cross and killing him on the cross. He was always there through the whole thing, maybe from a distance sometimes. Maybe he was warming his hands around the fire when Jesus had been taken on into the inner sanctum there to go before the officials. But he was still there. He was still there all the way through everything that happened. But if you look linguistically at 1 Peter 5, verse 1, if you look at the language, if you go back to the Greek and you look at it, it would appear what Peter is saying is, as an elder, I have been a witness of Christ's sufferings as an elder. Sure, I did all these other things. Sure, I was an eyewitness over there. But it seems like he's saying, as I serve as an elder, I've been witness to the sufferings of Jesus. You see, it's not always easy to be an elder. There's a fair amount of suffering that goes along with it. But suffering is important. And according to Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 12, he said, if we suffer with Christ, we'll reign with Christ. Peter also says, I'll be one to share in the glory to be revealed. Now, is he going to share in this glory simply because he's an elder? No. No, and I'm not indicating that. Peter doesn't indicate that. All Christians who are faithful will share in that same glory according to Revelation chapter 2, verse 10. But as an elder, you have proved to live a life worthy of respect. And there's a place of high esteem for those who have kept the faith in this way. And elders will receive their just reward. Verse 2, same chapter, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 2. Peter says, be shepherds of God's flock that's under your care, serving as overseers, not because you must, but because you are willing. Peter's saying there, God has entrusted you as an elder to take care of his flock. Parents understand this concept of their children being on loan to them from God. We understand that as parents. Their children are a gift. They're to be protected. They're to be nurtured. They're to be cared for, taught, trained, prepared for living and for serving God. So parents, make the most of those 18, 19, 20 years, whatever they are, that you have them in the home to raise them the best that you can. And much the same way, I believe Peter is sort of indicating here, the church is on loan from God to the elders, to the shepherds, to the overseers, and they must protect them. Protect the flock to the best of their ability, and they need to love them and care for them. Teach them, train them, prepare them for living and for serving God, because in the same way, they're with you just for a short while. And somebody has got to guard against, help them be prepared and be guarded against the schemes of Satan, of the devil, and protect them. It's a wonderful, powerful reminder that Peter gives. He said, be shepherds of God's flock. Notice that. God's flock. The church belongs to God. Not to the elders. To God. It's His flock. It's His church. Now the elders watch after His people, watch after His flock, but they're not their own. Elders ought not to become elders to push their own agendas. The only authority an elder has is what God gives him. And he has been entrusted by God to serve in God's behalf, but it's God's flock. He protects God's flock, not his. But that carries with it a tremendous responsibility. Then verse 4, same chapter. Peter says, when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory. It'll never fade away. Again, are the elders the only ones that are going to get a crown of glory? No. The Greek word used here is Stephanos, which refers to the victor's crown. That's the crown that all Christians will wear if they're faithful. It's the one, as I've already said, Revelation chapter 2, verse 10. God says, I'll give you the crown of life. Elder doesn't get a different crown than anybody else. There's not but one other crown mentioned in Scripture, and that's the crown of the diadem, and that's reserved for God. He's the only one going to wear that crown. But as elders, since they have this tremendous respect and responsibility from God, if they serve faithfully, they're going to wear the Stephanos, the crown of glory. Elders not only have respect with God, but they have a respect, a certain respect with men. With men. With people. Apostle Paul talks about this respect, I believe, in 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy 5, verse 17. He said, the elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor, especially those whose work is preaching and teaching. Paul is saying there that elders or an elder could be supported financially by a church. He gives the illustration of an ox and putting a muzzle over the mouth of the ox while the ox is treading out the grain. And he said, why would you do that? Why would you not allow the ox to at least be able to eat some of the fruit of his labor to keep his strength up for the work? So Paul says, you ought not to muzzle the ox that's treading out the grain. Now, I'm going to tell you, as I'm saying that, I'm just making the point to try to tell you there's a respect that comes from men. If your motivation for becoming an elder is a paycheck, you probably ought to reconsider. You really ought to. I served many years as an elder, and so far I had never got my paycheck yet. I don't know of very many churches anywhere that have elders on the payroll, and I'm not suggesting that we ought to, but Paul is saying they could. The fact remains, it could happen, because he says a good elder is worthy of that kind of respect. That kind of respect with men. Then Paul writes in verse 19, he says, don't entertain an accusation against an elder unless it's brought by two or three witnesses. Now, this shows the respect for men that goes along with the office also. This comes from the Jewish tradition in Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 15, that says for someone to be accused of a crime, at least two people, two witnesses, must come forward and go on record for bringing the charge. Paul is elevating here the respect that men should have for elders by saying if you want to bring a personal charge against an elder, you are bound by the same guidelines you would be bound by to bring a criminal charge in a court of law. That's what he's saying. He said don't personally attack them casually. You need at least two witnesses. Why, Paul? Because they are shepherds of God's flock. If you serve as an elder, let me tell you what, you are constantly on the firing line. You're taking bullets every week, if not every day. Paul is saying if you're going to accuse an elder, he's not saying here now, let me be clear what Paul's saying. He's not saying asking an elder a question. He's not referring to having a conversation of wanting clarity from an elder. What he's saying is if you're going to accuse an elder, if you're going to rebuke an elder, he said you need to bring with you at least two witnesses. Paul's saying they deserve more respect than that. They deserve more than angry emails or anonymous phone calls. He said, hold them in high regard because rebuking an elder is a serious offense. There's a respect that goes with it with men. Now, even though the Bible says there's some good things about being an elder, let me quickly share with you, there's also some bad things associated with it. There are tremendous costs that people don't always consider when they say, man, I'm ready, but put me in the game, coach. Let me step up to the plate. I'm ready to go. I have the desire to serve. There's some things that need to be thought about first. The same respect that you gain through hours and even years of service for the church, that same respect can be lost at any moment with a drop of a hat, just like that. Because folks just get mad at you. Because you see, an elder has to make decisions that aren't always popular, but they're the best, at least as he knows and the group knows, to do for the church. If you're going to take on that role, you got to learn how to stand for truth. You got to learn how to deal with conflict. You got to learn how to deal with people who are upset and realize they're still good folks and they may just be upset and they just need somebody to listen and to help. But you've got to learn to have a backbone and be able to say, no, no, I understand what you're saying you want, but the New Testament says this. And that's what we're going to need to do. Compliments come few and far between sometimes. Many times people never say thank you. And you may be the hero one week, and the next week you're the villain. Also, not only do you lose respect sometimes, you're going to lose some sleep. There's going to be some sleepless nights. Worrying about judgment calls and decisions that have been made. Worrying about leadership. Worrying about conflict. Worrying about the flock. It brings pressure. Brings stress. Not only do you lose respect and you lose sleep, you're going to lose your time. Shepherding the flock and overseeing a congregation demands enormous amounts of time. You're going to sit in meetings sometimes for hours. You're going to lose a lot of evenings at home visiting and meeting with people who need a listening ear, need some counseling, need some teaching. It really does take years off your life. You ever notice our presidents as they go into office, how young they look going in and how old they look coming out? It's kind of like that way with being an elder. You go in, if you got a little hair, you're probably not going to have much hair after a few years, because serving as an elder is a stressful thing. And to say that it's not is just not being realistic. It's just not facing reality. And so when you factor in the good and the bad, you may say, well, Danny, what are you saying? What are you saying? I'm suggesting to you this morning that when it's all mixed together, serving as an elder is an awesome responsibility, but it's also a tremendous honor and a blessing to be able to serve. It provides you a connection to people that you cannot imagine. You'll find a connection with people who are baptized into Christ. As an elder, you'll go find that precious soul that's still got water dripping off of them, and you hug them, and you tell them, I love you, and I'm going to be one of your shepherds. God's given me the job to help you learn and to help you grow and to help you follow the good shepherd, Jesus, all the days of your life. And let me tell you something, that's a joy money just can't buy. You can't go to the mall and find that. It's going to give you a connection to people in hospital rooms. When people are ill, may even be near death, they want to see their preachers. They want to see their closest friends. But you know who else they want to see? They want to see their elders. In fact, Peter said, or James said in James chapter 5, when you're sick, you ought to call for the elders. Why? They're the spiritual leaders. They're the spiritual overseers, protectors. People want to see them in times of trouble. You will go into rooms at the hospital sometimes that doctors don't even go into. And you will have the opportunity, the connection, to stand there and to hold their hand, sometimes as life is slipping out of their body, to pray with them, maybe sing with them. There's several of you there. And you'll be able to stand there and say, well done. You lived a good life of service. And you go on now. We'll take care of your family. We'll make sure they are cared for. Let me tell you, that's a connection that you just can't describe. You just got to experience it. There's a connection with ministry staff. Personally, my life, God has blessed me tremendously through the years. As a preacher early on in my life, a full-time preacher for a church in Dallas, I was blessed to work with some of the finest elders in the world. And then over the course of the last 15 years or so, God has allowed me to serve as an elder with some outstanding preachers. And I'm going to tell you, the relationships and the friendships that are developed between elders and preachers are precious indeed. You're a team. You're a team under the Lord. You love each other. You plan together. You work together. You pray together. You laugh together. You may even cry together. But you stand together in one accord for the furtherance of the kingdom. And you just can't describe that camaraderie. You just got to experience it. Not only do you have a connection with people, but you have a special connection with God. You really do. You watch over His flock. And if you can keep that in your mind and realize who you are and what you are and what you're not, that is a very special connection. You remember, we heard it read here just a second ago. Steve read it just a minute ago. John chapter 21. Jesus was going back to heaven and he asked Peter three times, "Peter, do you love me?" And each time Peter said, "Yes, Lord, I love you. Yes, I love you. Lord, you know I love you." And each time Jesus told him, "Then feed my sheep." Isn't it interesting that that's ironically the same thing Peter, who Jesus told him that, same instructions he gives to his fellow elders in 1 Peter chapter 5? Same thing he said. He said, feed God's flock, feed God's sheep. And Peter still relays that message to elders today. As an elder, you share that connection all the way back to the writing of the New Testament. Feed my sheep. As an elder, you're expected to teach God's Word. And as you teach, you grow in your faith. And you develop a greater knowledge of His Word. And you grow in the things. You build more confidence in the things you believe. And that connects you to the Father. And one other thing, I think sometimes as an elder, you gain an understanding of Jesus that some may never find. You say, what do you mean by that? The Bible says Jesus is the Good Shepherd. It shows us times when He watches the sheep that go astray. He watches sheep and deals with sheep that are stubborn. He deals with sheep that know what's the right thing to do, but do what's wrong. As an elder, guess what? You're going to get to do the same thing. You're going to be a shepherd, and you're going to deal with folks that are stubborn. You're going to deal with folks that you're trying to lead and they don't want to follow. You're trying to stand for right and they want to do what's wrong. Let me tell you something. At those moments, you can identify with Jesus as He was describing being the Good Shepherd working with those sheep. But you're going to also experience the joy when sheep grow. When they're obedient to God, and when they see the cross through the fog and the haze of this old nasty world. So back to the question. Why in the world would anyone want to be an elder anyway? And I promised you an answer. I promised you I'd offer you an answer, so here it is. It's very simple. It's real easy. It's because you have the chance. You have the opportunity to make a difference. To make a difference for the kingdom. and all congregations, this good church included, need men who are willing to do just that. It comes with a lot of good, and sometimes even more bad. But in the end, it's worth it. And it's an honorable task, and it is God's pattern for His church. This morning, you may not have the Good Shepherd in your life, but He's ready to step into that role. Jesus is waiting for you to obey Him and follow His example. And He will shepherd you all of the days of your life. Why not obey Him right now as we stand and as we sing?